Americans for the Arts.
Good morning. Welcome to Radioactivity. I'm Rob Lori. Coming up today on the first part of today's show, we'll hear Florida This Week from this past Friday night. It's a public television station program that I host that features usually a Democrat, a Republican, and a couple of journalists. It could be a couple of professors. We talked about the big stories of the week. This week, we're going to be talking about national focus on one of Tallahassee's practices, that is the way Tallahassee denies automatic restoration of ex-felons' voting rights. That's one of the topics that comes up today on Florida This Week. As you listen to the show, please email us if you've got thoughts about what's being said. You can email the studio here. Our address is dj@wmnf.org. Here's Florida This Week. Coming up next, another hurricane hits the U.S. mainland, testing again the president's response to disaster. Governor Scott moves forward with plans to replace three members of the Florida Supreme Court, even though it's not clear he has the power to do so. Comedian John Oliver takes aim at the way Florida handles restoration of voting rights for ex-felons. And Judy Genschaff plans to step down after a long tenure at the helm of USF. Political Insights next on Florida This Week.
WEDU Studios, this is Florida This Week. And now, moderator Rob Lori.
Welcome back. This week our panelists are Alex Sink is the former chief financial officer for the state of Florida and a Democrat. Barry Edwards is a radio commentator and a Democrat. Danny Alvarez is an attorney and a Republican. And Molly Moorhead is an editorial writer for the Tampa Bay Times. Great to have you here. Thanks for coming.
Thank you.
Well, as the nation deals with yet another hurricane, President Trump's comments this week about last year's Hurricane Maria and Puerto Rico are causing problems. Florida Republicans have spent months trying to shore up support among Puerto Ricans who fled to the state after Hurricane Maria, said this week they do not agree with Trump's denial of the death toll in Puerto Rico. Trump ignited a political firestorm after tweeting, without evidence, that 3,000 people did not die following Hurricane Maria. He called the death toll number a plot by Democrats to make him look as bad as possible. Those tweets were rejected by Republicans, including Ron DeSantis and Governor Rick Scott, who has visited Puerto Rico 7 times since Maria, also said he disagrees with the president, saying he's seen the devastation firsthand. The president's denial of the death toll also raises questions about his administration's handling of hurricane disasters. Tens of thousands of Puerto Ricans fled the island after last year's hurricane and have relocated here to Florida. Here's Lieutenant General Russell Honore, who helped the recovery after Hurricane Katrina, reacting to the president's tweets about Puerto Rico.
He wasn't born a politician, but he sure in the hell act like one. Won't admit to nothing and deflects it. And I think that's something he needs to grow out of. Well, he had his Katrina moment. It's called Maria. And the picture everybody will remember is those paper towels going out and throwing them. And oh, by the way, giving himself an A. I think he need to move on, and let's see, everybody can live and learn, and let's see if he can focus on Florence, stay off the damn golf course, and cheer these troops on who out on ships, out on sea, flying helicopters and airplanes trying to get ready to come while their families stay ashore and have to evacuate separately.
So, Molly, I guess with the Florida Republicans saying the president's not right on this one, it really shows, I think, the importance of the Puerto Rican community here in Florida for voting.
It does, and Governor Scott and Ron DeSantis are both making a pretty aggressive push to win some of those voters. You know, we're not really talking about people who have come to Florida since Maria. These are established Floridians who mostly have traditionally voted Democratic, but Scott and DeSantis are not writing them off. They both have Spanish language ads out, and so Trump has just made it that much harder for them to thread the needle of not alienating the president's base, but also you know, having to denounce what was, you know, a blatantly false statement.
Danny, I mean, with all the problems in Puerto Rico and still the recovery not complete, I mean, the president does seem a little insensitive by denying that the death toll is high.
Well, I can see how he's reacting. He thinks he saw something on the ground, and then all of a sudden a number comes out that's not reflective. And then there's always a political tinge to everything that, you know, when he's responding to it. But, you know, back to your question about the Puerto Rican importance, it's absolutely important. It's vital in this state, and if you don't recognize it, then you're going to die on the vine. And I think Republicans are finally recognizing it, and they're giving it its due course. We know that the Hispanic vote is growing. In Hillsborough County, it's 30%, and we know that it's growing. If you don't court the Puerto Rican core in Orlando and the rest of the state, really, then you're really leaving yourself out to dry.
And Alex, the Republicans did draw a really strong line between them and the president, which is unusual because especially DeSantis is very right. close to President Trump.
I was stunned, Rob, because I think that the rule of the Republican candidates these days is don't say anything against Donald Trump because he'll be right out there tweeting against you. And actually, maybe it's instructional that after Scott and DeSantis were both so strong in coming out denying what Donald Trump said, I think he's been pretty quiet. He did not retweet or respond, and that just says everything. And I agree that it shows the importance of the Hispanic vote all over the state of Florida that they were so strong.
And Barry, the president's going to have a lot of problems. I mean, the recovery from Puerto Rico still isn't complete. Some Puerto Ricans who are here in Florida are losing their housing vouchers this right. weekend, so they're going to be in trouble. And now on top of that, he's got this new hurricane, Florence, that's causing tremendous problem on the east coast of South Carolina and North Carolina. I mean, the president has to look forward, not backwards, right?
Well, you're judged in what you do with what you got. So this handling of the hurricane this week is going to be consequential for the elections nationwide. We saw nationwide about a week ago, but right before McCain died, the generic ballot, which is do you prefer a Republican or a Democrat, was about a 0.7 or so for the Democrat. Now it's about 11 or 12. And it was after he did the whole flag raising with McCain. So that was really consequential, which puts us into a blue tsunami. And if he screws up in South Carolina, North Carolina, he can write off the Congress and the Senate. And for the Puerto Ricans that are here already that didn't come from the last hurricane, there's over a million people that think that or say that they have Puerto Rican ancestry or descent. And so that's who they're really going after as far as both the Republican and Democrat. And that's the only thing that's really positive in this for the governor is Rick Scott has a 62% favorable amongst Puerto Ricans and Hispanics. And Bill Nelson only has a 48% favorable, and Scott is a 35% unfavorable, and Nelson a 42%. So Rick Scott, believe it or not, has a 22% higher net favorable amongst Hispanic voters in Florida, and that's really the only thing that's keeping them alive today.
I want to go back to this. You say that there was a sea change in terms of whether or not there's going to be a blue wave because of the president's handling of John McCain's passing?
Absolutely. Just in focus groups that I've done, everything was pretty consistent. Florida, we seem to be the worst performing state for Democrats since Trump was elected in the country, according to 538.com. But that all changed with McCain. And just anecdotally, talking to anybody who was in the military, they were livid. And they may not vote for Andrew Gillum if they're a Republican, but they're going to withhold their vote from Ron DeSantis as a protest to say, I'm not going to tolerate Donald Trump anymore. I think this is going to cost Trump the House and the Senate.
Molly, one last question. That is, Miami Herald reported just a few days ago that despite what the Democrats had hoped for, not that many people who had fled the island of Puerto Rico are signing up to vote, that those numbers aren't really very high. They're in the thousands, not in the tens of thousands. And so this expectation, I think, by Democrats that they're going to get a lot of people who are angry at the slow pace of recovery in Puerto Rico may not come to pass for the Democrats.
Right, and I think that what you said is also true about young voters. Following the Parkland shooting, you know, there's been this huge push for to register young people, and the numbers are not showing that, you know, that they're flooding to their supervisor's office.
Yeah, I think the devil there is in the details. So, Hispanics do not turn out in the numbers that they should. They're, like, for example, Hillsborough County, again, it's 30%, but we don't get that kind of power showing in the elections, per se. But the fight is for each one of those that does show up. And so when Rick Scott's numbers are 60-plus percent, that's not a surprise. There's been an investment in that effort since his last election. He had three Hispanic political directors and a huge, huge effort ever since his election to stay in that community and make sure he stays focused with
this. He's been to Puerto Rico 7 times.
And there's a absolute fact.
That's a sign.
Yeah, it's a sign.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, in a move that could trigger a legal challenge and a constitutional crisis, Governor Rick Scott has moved ahead with plans to replace three justices on the Florida Supreme Court who are being forced to retire next year because of age limits.
The three justices who are departing are often part of a majority that has ruled against Scott and the Republican-controlled legislature. Scott is asking a nominating commission to come up with a list of possible replacements for Justices Fred Lewis, Barbara Perrienti, and Peggy Quince. But there have been mounting questions as to whether it's up to Scott or up to his successor to appoint the next three justices. Scott has previously said he planned to name the three new justices on the morning of his last day in office. The Florida branch of the League of Women Voters and the government watchdog group Common Cause last year filed a petition with the court saying Scott's successor should make the Supreme Court appointments. In an effort to possibly avoid litigation, Scott's office says that he will allow whoever wins the gubernatorial election in November to interview the finalists for the court. The governor would then attempt to reach an agreement with the new governor on who to pick. Scott's desire to name the new justices could also be complicated by his run for the U.S. Senate against Democratic incumbent Senator Bill Nelson. If he wins, Scott could be forced to step down as governor a few days before his term as governor actually ends. That's because Congress, at least for now, is scheduled to start its 2019 term on January 3rd, before a new Florida governor is sworn into office. That comes 5 days later, on January 8th.
So, does Governor Scott have the law on his side?
It's complicated, as in both things in politics. And the reason why he's being a little magnanimous, I think, is more for show. The reason why Governor Bush did the deal with Lawton Childs, or Governor Childs did it with Governor Bush, is there was uncertainty. When Governor Bush and Childs made the appointment for Peggy Quince, there were 9 people on what's called the Judicial Nominating Commission. 3 were appointed directly by the governor, 3 by the Florida Bar, and those 6 chose 3 more. Well, Jeb Bush didn't like that. He said, I'm never going to have to compromise again. And so he got it scheduled, so now 5 of the members of the Judicial Nominating Commission are appointed directly by him and 4 by the bar. And when the bar recommends to him, he can reject them and send them back. So those 9 people have 60 days from when he requests, which they started. And then he has 60 days after that to pick. The problem, I think, for the Democrats or the Republican, whoever wins, is the governor appoints people regularly before their vacancy for the appellate courts and for the circuit courts. But the argument you'd have to make is that he was going to be the governor the next day. But it really is moot because the JNC is going to send up 3 panels of 3 to 6. As long as they do that, he has to choose from those panels.
But couldn't the governor reject
He can ask them to send
that
up again.
Yeah.
The JNC and Pinellas, the Pasco Circuit, told Jeb Bush to stuff it and when he asked for new names. So if there's stuff there, but more importantly, the day of contention, the 3 judges become 70. Their term ends that day. So the next day, you disagree with that?
All right, so Alex.
Sure, that's right. We didn't talk about this earlier, but I talked to a couple of lawyers earlier today, and their terms, the 3 judges' terms are over at midnight on Inauguration Day.
Right.
Yeah, which is after the governor steps down.
Which is after the governor steps down, because we'll have, as of noon on Inauguration Day, we have a new governor. And they believe that even Governor Scott's own lawyer, when they had this initial hearing earlier this year, agreed that that was the case.
But the question, I think, is moot, because if he can put his own he's picked 5 of these members, and they're loyalists that he can talk to directly and tell him what he wants. In fact, one of them told me he's told him who he wants. So if they send the panel and they say we're not going to send a new panel, then the new governor is going to have to pick from those three panels of judges.
But Alex, could the new governor, whoever that is, reject the Judicial Nominating Commission nominees and say, look, I'm not going to pick from this slate. I'm going to appoint a new Judicial Nominating Commission.
Well, can't do that.
And you can't do that?
They have terms. They've defended.
They have terms. Okay.
Well, the people that are, excuse me, fortunately, the League of Women Voters and Common Cause are standing by ready to rebring the case, because originally, earlier this year, the court said, well, Governor Scott hasn't done anything yet.
So there's no standing until
he actually does something. So now that he has started this process, I think they'll be back in court, and they believe they're standing on very firm ground that it should be the new governor that appoints the new Supreme Court justices.
And when do the Judicial Nominating Committee members' terms end?
They're staggered.
Yeah.
But also, another thing is, on midnight, as CFO Sink said, is that the three liberal justices, Lewis, Pierante, and Quince, expire. So if the suit isn't settled by then, the next day it'd just be the four other justices. So it's going to be pretty interesting.
Alex, let me ask you. I mean, the high court right now up there in Tallahassee has these three liberals on it, and they've been able to sometimes, many times, block what Governor Scott and the legislature are trying to do. If they're removed, what happens to the ideological nature of the Florida Supreme Court?
Well, that's the whole issue that we've got that was playing out in the national elections right here in Florida. Let me give a good example. Just recently, the school amendment, Amendment 8, charter school amendment, which didn't mention charter schools, by the way, but it was the charter school amendment, just got kicked off the ballot in a 5-4 decision by the Supreme Court. Three of the five who agreed that it was not correct to be on the ballot are the three that are getting ready to term out. And so we are staring in the face a potentially huge ideological shift in the Supreme Court of the state of Florida. And of course, for people of my ideology, I would argue that thank heavens for the Florida Supreme Court, because they have stood in the way of some really, really bad policies being implemented in the state over the course of the last 8 years.
That's a huge issue.
Consider one more dilemma. What if Andrew Gillum wins, and then he's got the Judicial Nominating Committee that already has its set terms by Florida law? He's going to have to pick from the people that were sent up by the pro, Rick Scott, JNC. So.
Yeah, and he may not like the people that are.
He might
sent
not.
Out
Rick Scott may have his way. The ghost of Rick Scott might there.
And it's really consequential. Like, see, if it's like redistricting. Barbara Pierante. The only reason why we have somewhat fair districts in Florida, which are not really fair yet, but the Democrats are even have a somewhat level playing field, is because she led the court to say the voters on fair districts, which I think your group pushed also, League of Women Voters, and that was violated, and they came down and protected it. The conservative members, like Charlie Kennedy, voted against the league.
Yeah, all right. Well, comedian John Oliver took direct aim this week at Governor Scott's handling of voting rights for ex-felons.
When he came into office, the governor reversed the policy of the previous governor, Charlie Crist, who had granted automatic restoration of voting rights for nonviolent ex-felons. Now, Governor Scott requires a lengthy 4-step process to get rights restored. Wait 5 to 7 years after leaving prison, apply, wait, and then go before the governor and the cabinet to request the right to vote. That drew a long comedy bit by Oliver last Sunday.
This is a board of clemency. Okay? There's no law we're following. The law had already been followed by the judges. So we get to make our decisions based on our own beliefs. There's no standards. Each of us have the right opportunity to make a decision based on what we believe. This is a court of mercy. It's not a court. If you walk up and say, I deserve something, that's not how this works. There's absolutely no standards. So we can make any decisions we want.
Just watch Leon Gillis. He had served time for robbery and drug convictions, but had been clean for 8 years and was running a drug rehab program when he made his case to the board in 2011. Rick Scott actually commended him for the progress that he'd made and then said this.
So at this point, I'm going to deny restoration of civil rights. Thank you.
Can I ask you a question?
Yes, sir.
How long is that?
I'm not sure. I think every case is different.
Well, what should I do with my life then?
if I'm doing everything I'm supposed to do, and I'm trying and I'm making sure that I do the right thing I'm supposed to do, then how long am I supposed to wait?
I couldn't tell you that answer, but if today I'm not, I don't feel comfortable doing it.
Okay. Thank you, sir.
And that was it. He refused to restore someone's civil rights without demonstrating much more of a reason than, I don't know, I guess I'm just not feeling it right now.
About 1.5 million ex-felons are waiting for their voting rights to be restored here in Florida. There's a huge backlog at the cabinet, and the issue of whether or not to restore voting rights automatically for nonviolent ex-felons will be on the ballot this November.
So, Alex, you were on the cabinet for a while. You served in those clemency hearings. Do we have a fair process?
Hell no. It is totally unfair. And even watching that clip, Rob, just makes me have hives and relive those clemency board hearings I had to endure and sit through. When Governor Charlie Crist came into office, the very first clemency board meeting we had, four meetings per year, I was warned that it was the most difficult part of my job, changed the rules as to make it more clear when people could get their rights restored. And fortunately, I was there along with Charlie Crist and the Ag Commissioner went along with the rule change. General McCollum did not. But as a result, over the course of the next 4 years, 150,000 additional people were able to get their rights automatically restored without going through that ridiculous kangaroo court process. Mm-hmm. And subsequently, the very first meeting that that Governor Scott and Pam Bondi had, along with the two other cabinet members, they totally rejected all of the rule changes. And sent in the last 8 years, less than 5,000 people have been granted their rights to be restored. It's horrible, it's inhumane, and I just hope the people of Florida will pass Amendment 4, which is the automatic restoration of civil rights, like 48 other states have in this country. We are a total outlier.
Molly, the governor there said that there are no standards, there are no rules, they just make them up there at the cabinet. What do you make of that?
It was shocking to hear him actually say out loud what is clear when you watch it, that it's arbitrary, it's unfair. They ask irrelevant questions. They ask people how often they go to church. CFO Patronus got in hot water recently for asking somebody how many children he had by how many different women. And then they just make their decision kind of on a whim or however they're feeling. But in addition to the argument about how this is an inhumane process, it's also costing the taxpayers of Florida a lot of money. And that's why you saw the Freedom Partners, which is a group related to the Koch network, the Koch brothers, is endorsing this amendment. And that's because when people get out of prison, if they're able to vote, if they're able to get a job, have an occupational license, serve on a jury, really become members of society again, they're less likely to reoffend. Mm-hmm. And a higher recidivism rate costs the state millions of dollars. The recidivism rate is twice what it was during Charlie Crist's administration. And for every person that you can keep from reoffending, that saves $20,000 a year that it costs to feed and house them in
That's
Florida
a big
prisons.
Number. All right. Well, USF President Judy Genshaft announced her retirement this week. She's stepping down after 18 years on the job.
As the Tampa Bay Times reported, under her watch, USF has achieved preeminent status along with the University of Florida and Florida State. There's now a state-of-the-art medical school gearing up in downtown Tampa. Graduation rates have improved dramatically, so has fundraising. Research funding and patents have boomed. Genshaft, though, has weathered her share of controversies, such as her decision to fire tenured computer science professor Sammy Alarian in 2003, drawing international debate about academic freedom as he was accused of terrorist activities. A federal judge did acquit him on 8 counts, but was deadlocked on the remaining 9. He was later deported. She has also clashed with defenders of USF St. Petersburg, who accused Tampa administrators of starving the separately accredited school of money and of freedom. But in the end, under her watch, the university has seen steady growth, and Genshaft will leave the job after serving the longest of any president in USF's 62-year history.
Danny, we just have 30 seconds. What do you think her legacy is going to be?
It's going to be one that is incredible. I mean, she is the crown jewel. She's brought the crown jewel up in our area. She's a firebrand. We're going to miss her like crazy because what she's done for USF is what we all knew was there. She just helped us tell the rest of the world that USF is what it is. It was under her leadership. Yeah, people, you know, have a mixed record sometimes, but she will be remembered for being the one that took us to the preeminent status and put us on the map.
Big question is who replaces her. We'll have to discuss that
big
later.
Shoes.
Barry, your other big story of the week.
51 years ago, Tampa elected a 34-year-old mayor, and his whole legacy was bringing people together. He appointed the first African-American to be an officer in a police department in the South, the first African-American to be an officer in the fire department. And his whole legacy was bringing people together, and that was Dick Greco. And he's 85 today, and I think that if our elected leadership today and our candidates would look around, he's got a legacy wherever he goes. He's a rock star still, even at 85, because people liked him. And the way you're liked is not by dividing, but bringing people together and uniting. Happy birthday, Dick Greco.
All right, Molly, your other big story.
The Pasco County Commission this week approved a 350-acre solar array for a rural, rolling hills, sparsely populated corner of Pasco County. And the neighbors are up in arms because they feel like it's industrial development in the middle of their scenic rolling hills. But it's surely a sign of progress when the big NIMBY issue is not a nuclear waste dump, but a solar farm.
So. All right, Danny, you're on the big story.
A big move for the Hillsborough County. The Hillsborough County Sheriff's Office is launching a first of its kind Facebook and Twitter in Spanish, targeted to the Hispanic community that we know is 30%. So it's time to talk to them in their language. That launches on Wednesday. It's a really big deal. Not even Miami-Dade has a Hispanic Facebook page, all Spanish.
That's your day job, too,
right? That's right.
All right. Alex, show the big story.
So my big story is Hurricane Florence was predicted to be a monster Category 5 or maybe Category 4 storm. Millions and millions of people evacuated from the coast of the Carolinas. And guess what? It's hitting today, Category 1, and I'm just concerned that for the future, more and more people will remember this, and if they hear scare tactics and evacuation orders, they'll just stay put, and that's dangerous for people.
Very dangerous, especially with those storm surges. Mm-hmm. Thank you all for coming
to
the show. Great to have you here. Thanks for watching Florida This Week.
Well, that was Florida This Week, a TV show on Channel 3, the PBS station in Tampa that serves 16 local counties. And my guests on that show were Barry Edwards, Alex Sink, Danny Alvarez, and Molly Moorhead. Molly is an editorial writer for the Tampa Bay Times. And, of course, Alex Sink, former candidate for governor here in Florida. I misspoke in the Judy Genshaft segment. I said a judge had found Sammy Alarian not guilty. Actually, a jury in Tampa had found him not guilty in 2005. Jury found him not guilty on 8 criminal counts related to terrorist support, perjury, and immigration violations. The jury was deadlocked on the remaining 9 counts against him after deliberating for 13 days, and it did not return any guilty verdicts against the 3 other defendants in that case. Just want to clear that up. I should know that. I should have written it better. Our phone number is 813-239-9663, and our email address is dj@wmnf.org. Let's open up the phones and talk about some issues in the news, and if there's something that's on your mind, if you want to comment about one of those topics that we discussed there, Puerto Rico or the who gets to choose the next 3 Florida Supreme Court justices, or John Oliver's commentary on the way that we currently don't automatically restore voting rights to ex-felons, and then Judy Genshaft leaving USF. We can talk about any of these issues. Our phone number, 813-239-9663. And you can send your email into the studio here at dj@wmnf.org. Well, there's lots in the news. The death toll is rising from Florence. It's now reached 18 people who have been killed in various ways as Hurricane Florence hit North and South Carolina last Friday. And there is a big news about Judge Kavanaugh's nomination to the U.S. Supreme Court. And it's hard to know which story to pick. I've got the stories in my hand here. looking at my news feed, but it's safe to say that some people think that the there should be a delay on the vote of the Kavanaugh nomination, and the woman currently making sexual abuse allegations against him ought to be given a chance to testify. Just reading from the Washington Post a few minutes ago, the White House on Sunday stood by Brett Kavanaugh after a woman publicly accused him of sexual assault decades ago, an allegation that triggered the most concrete signs yet of Republican resistance to President Trump's Supreme Court nominee. With the nomination suddenly in doubt, Senate Judiciary Committee Chairman Charles Grassley was working to arrange follow-up calls with Kavanaugh and Christine Blasey Ford, the woman who said he assaulted her when the two were in high school. Senators Jeff Flake of Arizona and Bob Corker of Tennessee, Republicans who are retiring at the end of this term, joined Democrats in urging a delay in the vote until the committee hears from Ford. The panel is scheduled to vote Thursday afternoon on Kavanaugh's nomination. So more trouble there for Kavanaugh, possibly. Our phone number, 813-239-9663. And Frank Knox is our phone producer today. And if there's something that you want to comment about, you can call us up, 813-239-9663. That's the number to call. The Associated Press has done some digging. They found a new cache of internal WikiLeaks files showing the Radical Transparency Organization staffers discussed having founder Julian Assange skip bail and escape from Britain as authorities closed in on him back in 2010. One of those documents obtained by the Associated Press captures supporters considering a potential Brazilian asylum claim. Another has Assange discreetly seeking a Russian visa. We'll see what happens with that. Our phone number, 813-239-9663. And U.S. Border Patrol supervisor, remains in jail in Texas after he confessed to killing four women and assaulting a fifth who managed to escape, police say. Juan David Ortiz is being held in Laredo, Texas on $2.5 million bond on four counts of murder, aggravated assault with a deadly weapon, and unlawful restraint. According to the affidavits, the 35-year-old Ortiz provided a voluntary verbal confession early Saturday in the killings of the women. Webb County District Attorney Isidro Alanez described Ortiz as a serial killer whose victims were believed to be prostitutes. Jail records don't list an attorney to speak for Ortiz, who had worked for Border Patrol for 10 years. He's the second Border Patrol agent in Laredo to be arrested on a murder charge this year. Well, let's go to the phones. Frank Knox is our phone producer today. This is 88.5 FM WMNF in Tampa. And let's go to Elizabeth in Riverview. Hi, Elizabeth, you're on. What would you like to say?
Thank you. I appreciate you taking the call. The one of your speakers was talking about the fact that people are not ordered to evacuate, but they are said, okay, it's time to get out and all that good jazz. The trouble with that is if there is something horrible that comes along where these people elect to stay, then emergency folks have to come out and rescue them during the time when emergency people shouldn't be there. I've forgotten where I lived, but at one time I lived in a place, and when hurricanes came, they said, you will evacuate. If you do not count on help, you are on your own. And that makes sense to me.
Yeah, you know, I've got relatives that live in North Carolina, and they say they only got 2 inches of rain, and they decided not to evacuate. But I think Elizabeth, as Alex Sink was saying, I think it all depends on how dangerous it is for you. If you know the storm surge, and they tell you what the storm surge is going to be, in this case, I think they said the storm surge in parts of North Carolina was going to be 10 to 12 feet.
Yeah.
If you know your house is only 5 feet above sea level, or that historically you live in an area that floods during heavy rains, then yeah, get out of there. Mm-hmm. But if you're living at 30 or 100 feet above sea level, maybe it's safe to hunker down and just ride through the storm.
That's true. It is something that you can elect to do, but dad blame it.
But when it is dangerous, get out of there.
Well, yeah, and if you haven't got sense enough to, I don't see why emergency folks should endanger themselves when you have been given all the facts, as you say, and you look at them and say,
Elizabeth, the other thing I think that we've got to take into account is that some people have cars that are unreliable. They have no money for a hotel or motel and no nearby relatives out of the flood zone that they can stay with. So for some people, it's not a matter of they're ignoring the warnings. For some people, it's they just have no option because they're so low income and their car doesn't work that they're afraid to take it on a road trip.
Also, there is the fact that when these emergencies come along, shelters are opened. I've forgotten where I was, but you could even take your animals.
Well, that's true. And around here, the shelters are open. We do have like 3 or 4 days advance notice. You're right. I mean, if you're living in a flood-prone area, get out. No doubt about it.
Yeah.
And go to that shelter if you can. I don't know what the shelter situation was like in eastern North Carolina or South Carolina.
Yeah. No, we don't know it.
Okay. Elizabeth, thanks a lot.
I talked to a relative up there, and they said, we didn't even get any rain.
All right, Elizabeth, thanks a lot. Good to hear from you. And let's go to McNamara in Tampa. McNamara, you're on. What would you like to say?
Hi, Rob. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Yeah, thanks for all you're doing, Gary. Mother Jones, October 2018, puppet master. Putin is still hacking our elections. Why doesn't Trump do something to stop him? The author is PEMALEBY. In case any of your people want to get in touch with him and ask who we'd like to send this story out to as many shakers and movers as we can, because I think it's real important. And thanks for all your help.
Oh, who wrote the article, Matt?
Yeah, it's P as in Peter, EMALEBY, this is the Mother Jones, and AJVICENS. And I'd like to get in touch with them, say, who do you want to send this article out to? Because, you know, it's a limited, people see Mother Jones, October 2018. So it's very thorough.
All right, so you're saying Pamela Levy wrote the article?
Pamela Levy wrote the article.
And who, okay.
AJVICENS. I don't know if we could get in touch with them, say, who would you like us to pass this on to? The most, biggest shakers, movers, people like you, you know. So.
All right.
Well, yeah, thanks a lot for all you're doing, guy.
Thanks, McNamara. Thank you. Well, our phone number is 813-239-9663. Email address dj@wmnf.org. Lots of emails about Eve Prang Plews, and just not to belabor this, but Eve passed away suddenly a few weeks ago. Her family said that she had an illness that came on suddenly and unfortunately took her life. There's going to be a memorial for Eve sometime in the next 6 weeks, and we will be announcing it as we get closer to that time. But yeah, we do miss Eve down here, and we're hoping to keep that 10 o'clock show every other Monday, a health and nutrition program. And we'll let you know, we're going to be trying some people out, and we'll let you know what the final outcome is in a few weeks. If you want to call up and talk about something that's in the news, there's a lot in the news that we could talk about. Our phone number, 813-239-9663, and our email address, dj@wmnf.org. John writes this, Florida's practice in restoring the rights of people who have completed their sentences are among the last vestiges of Jim Crow laws. They were designed to eliminate black people from voting and include the criminalization of many relatively minor offenses. It's time to kick Jim Crow out of the Florida State House, writes John. John, thanks for that. And Sean says that coming up on Midpoint today, we're going to get a live report from the aftermath of Hurricane Florence in North Carolina from the Tampa nonprofit group Mutual Aid Disaster Relief. And we'll hear from Darden Rice, a St. Petersburg City Council member. She participated in last week's Global Climate Action Summit in San Francisco. That's what's coming up in the next hour on Midpoint. Well, if there's something that you want to discuss, again, our phone number 813-239-9663, and our email address, dj@wmnf.org. So if there's something that you want to talk about. Donald writes this, the Republicans are so crooked, this is Donald's words, the Republicans are so crooked and can't stand not controlling power over people, even when they lose or leave office. Rick Scott is another example. What he's doing with the judges is like when in North Carolina the defeated GOP governor signed laws to weaken his Democratic successor before he left office. That's Donald out there. You know, I do think it's interesting, and Barry Edwards pointed this out. He said the Judicial Nominating Committee used to be a pretty fairly decided group of people who screen the applicants for judgeships. And Barry pointed out that it's now become politicized. And so the slate of judges that Governor Rick Scott will pick from is likely to lean far to the right. And that's just because the Judicial Nominating Commission itself represents largely the governor's own personal political philosophy. Again, our phone number, 813-239-9663. Email address, dj@wmnf.org. Here's Bob in Largo. He says, anyone close to a river flowing into the Atlantic Ocean should evacuate. Didn't people walk out of New Orleans from Katrina, writes Bob of Largo. Some people were able to walk out of New Orleans. Some people drowned because sections of New Orleans, like the Ninth Ward, are so low and the water couldn't go anywhere. People, I remember driving through the Ninth Ward a few years after Hurricane Katrina, and you could tell that the water was rising in the Ninth Ward so much that people were trapped in their homes. They weren't able to get out. It was a shock to them. They didn't expect the Ninth Ward to fill up with water. But it did. So they eventually went into their attics, and then when the water continued to rise, they cut holes in their roofs, and then they climbed out on their roofs. Now, some people had no hatchets or anything or no saws to cut a hole in the roof, and they drowned in the house. Maybe it was a one- or two-story house, but the water was so high that, unfortunately, people drowned in their own houses because they were afraid to get they couldn't walk through the water. It was too deep. And they were afraid they had no boat or anything to evacuate, so they were in their own house. And then if they didn't have a hatchet, couldn't cut a hole in their roof and climb through the hole, they drowned inside their own house. It was a terrible, terrible tragedy, and that was one of the reasons. So around here, too, if you think about the Tampa Bay area, if you look at those hurricane maps, huge sections, especially huge sections of the shoreline around St. Petersburg and Tampa, the area of south along the southeast shores of Tampa Bay, maybe just south of the Riverview area or maybe Riverview itself. I mean, a lot of those areas, if we have a storm surge of 10 or 12 or 15 feet, those are slated to be underwater if the hurricane hits us directly. So those would be the kinds of places that, as Elizabeth was saying, you'd want to leave and get out of your house. If you see that storm surge, and it's always good to check those maps. We're in the peak season of the hurricanes, so check those maps and see if you've just bought a new home. You probably have looked at it already, but you know, there are some places that are going to be inundated with water if a hurricane hits us directly. And the winds are right, and the tides are high. So there are going to be some places in Tampa, if we're ever hit directly, are going to be just devastated by a hurricane. Well, again, if there's an issue in the news that you want to talk about, our phone number is 813-239-9663, and our email address is dj@wmnf.org. I'm kind of surprised this story about the Border Patrol agent being a serial killer hasn't raised a lot of issues. You know, there is a lot of fear about immigrants here in the U.S., largely because the same story from San Francisco was replayed over and over again on some TV networks and designed to scare the heck out of people, where a homeless, undocumented immigrant picked up a gun. And then the gun killed a young woman in San Francisco. It was an inadvertent slaying. Not that any slaying is good, but the gunman didn't really try to kill the woman. But he was found later not guilty of any charge of homicide. But that story about the slaying in San Francisco was replayed over and over and over again to scare people about undocumented immigrants. Well, here you've got a case where a U.S. Border Patrol agent has killed four women. And you can bet that if there was a network that was pro-undocumented immigration, they would play this story over and over again to scare you about border agents. News sometimes, you know, when it's done fairly, you know, you put everything in context and you don't overplay a story and you don't underplay a story. In the case of the San Francisco killing, that story was overplayed to scare people about immigration. Well, it'll be interesting to see what the story about the U.S. Border Patrol agent confessing to killing four women, whether that is overplayed or underplayed in our media. And again, our phone number, 813-239-9663. Just got this news from Dennis, who is Eve Plew's husband. Dennis says the celebration of Eve's life will be at Selby Gardens, where they held their wedding reception 23 years ago. It'll take place on Friday, November 9th from 5 to 7 p.m. And so, Dennis, thanks for that reminder, too. And again, our phone number, 813-239-9663. Let's go to Brian in Sarasota. Brian, you're on WMNF. What would you like to talk about?
Well, you know, my first statement, and I shouldn't ask it, what are Republicans good for? I mean, but I'll change my attitude. You know, Sandra Day Connor said on NPR that she should have voted for Gore, but she was going to retire and she didn't want a Democrat to choose the next Supreme Court justice, so she voted Republican. So much for impartiality of the courts. And the other thing I'd like to mention is that North Carolina legislators outlawed sea level rise in 2012 in opposition to all the geologists and their own Department of Natural Resources. So going back to the original question, what are Republicans good for? So.
Well, that's true. In North Carolina, they did say you can't use sea level rise and climate change as a way to determine where future development should or shouldn't be located. And that was interesting. And I think the 2000 Supreme Court case is interesting because didn't the U.S. Supreme Court say that this case can never be used as precedent for future cases? Isn't that one of the things the U.S. Supreme Court said back in 2000 in deciding the election?
Right. Right. Well, the other problem is we have the same thing going on in Florida. My master's degree is in geology, you know, groundwater, hydrology, and all that type of information. And I'm really upset with Molt Marine, and because their funding comes from Mosaic, one of the major sources of pollutants in Florida. And neither Scott nor George or Jeb Bush ever addressed the big sugar or the Mosaic problem, and consequently, or the development problem, and consequently, Florida's going to have a severe water problem. It's going to be like someplace in the middle of the desert. We're losing our fresh water, and we're losing the quality of our fresh water, too. So. I guess that's the only comments I have to make.
All right, Brian. Yeah, I'm sure Moat Marine gets its funding from other sources than Mosaic. I think it does take funding from Mosaic too. But it's a big operation. I don't think Mosaic funds it entirely.
No. But I mean, it's like me being a doctor and saying I'm totally against lung cancer, but I do accept funding from Camel Corporation or, you know, Camel Cigarettes or Marlboro Cigarettes. And I mean, they're going to have to decide what they want to do. And that money determines how they address problems. It's the same thing with Monsanto and GMOs and glyphosate. I mean, if you're a food scientist, you're going to support information that's favorable to these people. If you're a climate scientist, it's usually governmental or university activities that are indicate what's happening on that particular level, and they're not being funded by any particular group.
Yeah.
So
all
it
right.
Could be a science. scientists, you have to. Okay.
Yeah, Brian, we're really losing you because our phone system is kind of screwed up. I think that line number one is really bad. So we got to get our engineers to call the phone company to work on that. Thanks a lot, Brian. Let's go to Daryl in Sarasota. Hi, Daryl. You're on WMNF. What would you like to say?
I just had something to add to that San Francisco story. What I read, I understood, was that the gun actually came from a state wildlife officer who left it in his car while his truck or whatever it was until he took his wife to dinner. And then someone stole it and then dropped it in a trash can. That's where the homeless guy found it. Did you hear about that?
Yeah, I just read from, I'm going to read from NBC News the undocumented immigrant found the semi-automatic handgun wrapped in a shirt under a chair on the pier, and that it went off by accident when he picked it up. The weapon, as it turned out, had been stolen from a Federal Bureau of Land Management ranger a week before. So, go ahead. Yeah.
But it just floors me that you keep seeing this thing pop up on Facebook. And you know it's a lie. And then sometimes I point it out to them, and people just still keep posting it, even though they know it's a lie.
The idea that this woman was deliberately targeted by an undocumented immigrant who had homicide on his mind. I mean, that's what's being pushed on some media outlets, right, like Fox. And I don't think that is really what happened. But you know, how many times was that story talked about on talk radio here in the country, and how many times was it repeated on Fox?
Tell
it
the facts and get to tell the whole story instead of just they cherry pick, you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do. That was the point I was making, is that if you repeat a story, one story long enough, and don't put it in context, and how many times does an undocumented immigrant kill somebody?
That's a quote from Goebbels right there.
Right, right.
tell a lie, no time to believe it.
Yeah.
It's like the politicians' campaign here in Florida. The video shows a hooded Hispanic person drawing a gun on a young woman walking down the thing, and that's the referring to that Kate Stanley thing.
So. Yeah, and Corcoran wasn't able to win with that. Wasn't able to win with that.
But that's the whole the right wing thing with the Trump. I mean, they scapegoat, they want to tell these poor people that are supporters, who are 80% of them are on week to week the paychecks, that these other poor people's fault. That's why you're broke.
That's right. That's right. All right, Daryl. Thanks a lot. All right. Great. Great to hear from you. Thanks, Daryl. Mike says that when a hurricane is bearing down on us, people can use this map to figure out where the high ground is in their area. And he says, go to mytopo.com and look at the topography maps to see where. There are a lot of good maps out there. And I think the hurricane guides that are sent out at the beginning of hurricane season are also very good. Thomas writes this, Rob, you said the shooting in San Francisco was inadvertent. How do you know that? Really? Writes Thomas. Well, I'm only saying that based on the newspaper articles I've read about it. But Thomas, if you've got better information, send it to me. You can send it to dj@wmnf.org. Let's go to Mike in Tampa. Mike, you're on MNF. What would you like to say?
Hi.
Hi.
I have one thing about Spanish language. I'm a second-generation immigrant. My father told my mother, my great-great-grandmother told my father, when you're in the house, you can speak Italian. But when you're outside the house, you must speak English. And it guiles me that we have people, we employ people, who can't speak English. I had my roof done, and the only person who spoke English was a supervisor. I could not explain things that were happening to the people that they had on the job.
Well, Mike, what would you do about it? How would you fix that?
A constitutional amendment to make English the language of America.
And would you force people to speak English then?
Yes.
All right, so you would have police arrest them if they didn't speak English.
I wouldn't have them on a job.
So Mike, let me ask you, Mike, you're Italian, right?
Yes.
Okay, so I grew up with a lot of Italians too. I'm from Pennsylvania. Lots of Italians there. I knew lots of families where the grandma spoke Italian and didn't speak any other language. And when my girlfriend's mother would want to speak to the grandma, she had to speak in Italian. But nobody was hauling her away. And the Italian...
No, but you're making 30%.
Well, can I just say, the Italian workers in my town were some of the hardest working people, and a lot of them spoke Italian. And it didn't hurt us back in the 60s and 70s to have somebody speak Italian. I mean, I think that's just ridiculous.
Sorry.
All right, well,
you,
Mike,
and I disagree on many things.
All right, Mike, we're out of time. Sorry about that. But if you want to comment about today's show, please call us up, 813-238-8001. Record your comment on extension 115. And I'll play your comments back later on this week. Stay tuned, because Sean Kinnan is coming up next, speaking with Darden Rice, a St. Pete City Council member. That's one of his guests today. This is 88.5 FM WMNF Tampa, St. Petersburg. Here's the news.
Live.